Okay, so sir, what I'll do is I'll be on mute. In
Firstly,
case
thank you.
of any disturbance, I will intervene in between. Otherwise, you can continue with your slides. And what we request is, sir, just if you can introduce yourself, in short, and then you can go on with the talk.
And the topic. And the topic
On
also,
the
sir.
talk. Okay. So sir, we are going on mute and we can start now.
Okay. Hello. My name's Peter Taylor, Professor of Musculoskeletal Sciences at the University of Oxford, and it's my pleasure to join you today. We're going to be discussing tofacitinib in rheumatic disease and evidence of its efficacy in patients with rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, and ankylosing spondylitis, with a particular emphasis on its reduction in pain. And then we'll turn our attention to ankylosing spondylitis and look at the phase two proof of concept study that was first undertaken to establish that tofacitinib has a potential benefit in ankylosing spondylitis. And then we'll go on to look at the definitive registration phase three study and look at the data which led to the approval of this drug in a number of regions around the world. So that's our agenda for today. So let's start off with a paper from a few years ago, which looks at the efficacy of tofacitinib in reducing pain in patients with three different rheumatic disease conditions: rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, and ankylosing spondylitis. And this was a post-hoc analysis of data from clinical trials in these three disease indications. Now, you'll all be aware, of course, that pain is the most common presenting symptom for patients with inflammatory musculoskeletal disease, and indeed, not just in presentation, but also throughout the disease course. In various surveys, patients with rheumatoid arthritis have reported that pain is the major impact for them in their quality of life. Of course, it also impacts a number of other domains as well, including function and fatigue. And pain is also a measure in the core domain sets for psoriatic arthritis clinical trials and in ankylosing spondylitis monitoring in clinical practice. Now, traditionally in rheumatology, we've attributed pain in rheumatic diseases to peripheral nociception associated either with the inflammatory process itself or with structural damage that has accrued over time. But in fact, now we understand that pain is more complex because we know that even those patients who achieve remission with no demonstrable inflammatory element to their condition may still report severe pain. And this may be what we call a nociceptive pain, or it may be nociplastic pain or neuropathic pain. So there are various types of pain. And so an important question is, to what extent does inhibition of the JAK-STAT signaling pathway actually interrupt and ameliorate that pain signal? Tofacitinib, as we know, is an oral JAK inhibitor, and tofacitinib is approved for the treatment of rheumatoid psoriatic arthritis and ankylosing spondylitis. It's predominantly a Janus kinase 1 and 3 inhibitor, and we'll now look at the post-hoc analysis. This was an analysis of seven double-blind, placebo-controlled randomized trials. It incorporated 3,330 patients, so there are a lot of patients with these three conditions. We'll look at the detail in a minute. And the duration of exposure to drug ranged from 6 months through to 24 months in rheumatoid arthritis, but was as short as 12 weeks, so just 3 months, in ankylosing spondylitis. Now, the patients were grouped according to what they had been exposed to previously, whether they'd just had non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs in the case of ankylosing spondylitis, or whether they had an inadequate response to conventional synthetic DMARDs or an inadequate response to TNF inhibitors. Now, in terms of clinical trials, pain can be measured in a number of ways. One of the easiest and well-validated is the simple visual analog scale from 0 to 100, where 0 is no pain and 100 is the worst pain imaginable. And usually that's anchored to a previous time duration. But other ways of scoring pain include the bodily pain domain in the SF-36, but also pain and discomfort that can be measured in the EQ5D. And of course, pain is also measured in the BASDAI score and the ASQOL score. So repeated measures models were used in this analysis, and the geographic location, visit, and study effects were all taken into account. And it was considered that an improvement in the visual analog score of 20 millimeters or more was clinically significant. So let's focus on the disease characteristics first of all. So between the randomized control trials, the rheumatoid patients were generally older, as you might expect. The psoriatic arthritis patients were next, and then the ankylosing spondylitis patients had a lower average age. The average time since diagnosis varied in rheumatoid from about 7 to 13 years, for psoriatic arthritis about 5 to 10 years, and for ankylosing spondylitis about 1.5 to 4 years. As you might expect, most of the rheumatoid patients were female. There was an equal prevalence and proportion of male and female patients with ankylosing spondylitis and of psoriatic arthritis, and in ankylosing spondylitis, as you would expect, the proportion was predominantly male. Now, here you can see some of the assessments, and what we're looking at here is the patient assessment of arthritis pain, so that's the visual analog scale, looking at reduction in baseline and comparing the placebo response, which is in a dark blue color, to the two doses of tofacitinib, 5 milligrams twice daily in the green line and 10 milligrams twice daily in the light blue line. And on the top row, we're looking at rheumatoid patients. In panel A, we're looking at a population who are inadequate responders to conventional synthetic DMARDs. In panel B, they were inadequate responders to anti-TNF. On the bottom row, we're looking at psoriatic arthritis, and similarly, the left-hand side is conventional synthetic DMARD inadequate responders, and the right-hand side is TNF inhibitor responders, inadequate responders. And you can see at a glance that both doses of tofacitinib differentiate from placebo at an early time point, and that differential is maintained over many weeks and months of treatment intervention. Now, the proportion of patients reporting at least 20 millimeters improvement from baseline was statistically significant in all analysis populations as compared with placebo, and the improvements were maintained over time. Now, this table is probably rather difficult for you to read, but I'm going to make it very simple. Really, what we're looking at here is the different disease phenotypes, the different categories of disease, and the different treatments they've been exposed to. So if we highlight these now, at the top row there, we're looking at rheumatoid patients. The very top row is the conventional synthetic DMARD inadequate responders. And below, in the light green box, we have TNF inhibitor inadequate responders. And on the left-hand side, you can see the baseline pain, whichever treatment assignment these patients were on, was very high. So it was 60 or more out of 100 on average, thereabouts. And if you look on the right-hand side, you can see after 3 months of intervention that there's been a really very remarkable and rapid reduction in pain score. And the average is greater than that 20 millimeters, as you can see for the test drug, for placebo at both doses, sorry, for tofacitinib at both doses, whereas there's a really much smaller placebo response. And similarly, if we look down each of the rows, you can now see psoriatic arthritis, and you can see that the psoriatic arthritis patients who were either conventional synthetic DMARD inadequate responders or anti-TNF inadequate responders, again, had high baseline pain in the mid-50s, and there was a marked reduction in pain in the tofacitinib dose assignments, and only a more modest reduction with placebo. If we look at another measure of pain in rheumatoid, and that's the SF-36 bodily pain domain, so that's looking at a slightly different expression of pain, you can see again the level is high at baseline across the treatment groups, but there's very little response or relatively little in the placebo and a nice reduction in the tofacitinib patients. Similarly, if we look at the area now highlighted in green for psoriatic arthritis, you can see high baseline bodily pain. And on the right-hand side of the table, you can see that there's been a nice reduction with tofacitinib and in the case of the placebo patients, the magnitude of reduction has been much less. Similarly, for ankylosing spondylitis, a smaller cohort of patients highlighted in the blue box now, and these were patients with an inadequate response to initial non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. And similarly, if we progress down to the EQ5D pain domains, we see exactly the same result. High baseline pain with significant amelioration with tofacitinib and a really fairly minimal amelioration and change on placebo. So we can summarize these results as follows, that when we look at the improvements in least square mean change from baseline in both arthritis pain visual analog score and the SF-36 bodily pain domain, you can see that both doses of tofacitinib were significant at all time points compared to placebo, with a significance level of less than 0.05. And in the ankylosing spondylitis population who had an inadequate response to non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, again, the change from baseline in the bodily pain score was greater and significantly greater with either tofacitinib dose than was the case with placebo at week 12. And again, that was highly significant. Looking at the EQ5D and other pain measures, again, we see nice corroborating evidence that tofacitinib gives rise to better improvements in the pain experience of the patients than was the case for placebo. So these data collectively very nicely establish the effectiveness of tofacitinib at both the doses that were tested versus placebo in terms of reducing the patient pain experience. And that, of course, might be localized joint pain. Sometimes we look at elicited joint pain through the tender joint counts, but also bodily pain and the totality of pain experience. The improvements were observed at the earliest measured time point. That's very important for our patients because, of course, they want to see an early benefit and they're more likely to be adherent to their drug regimes as prescribed if they see an early response. And we see that that response is then incremental over the following 3 months and more, and then sustained over time. The results are consistent with some of the data we've seen from previous biologic interventions in patients with these three disease types, rheumatoid, psoriatic arthritis, or ankylosing spondylitis. And again, it's confirmatory that an oral targeted synthetic therapy in the form of tofacitinib has at least a biologic-like efficacy in these patients. Let's turn our attention now to ankylosing spondylitis. And if we think back a few years, there was a lot of potential excitement about whether JAK inhibition might be useful in ankylosing spondylitis. But at that time, we'd already learned that TNF inhibition gives rise to good efficacy. But we had also learned that IL-17 inhibition helps in ankylosing spondylitis, whereas specific IL-23 inhibition did not seem to help. So the question was, would JAK inhibition with a JAK1/3 inhibitor in the form of tofacitinib actually give benefit? And to test the hypothesis that it might, a study was undertaken. This was a 16-week randomized double-blind placebo-controlled dose-ranging study. It was 208 patients to be enrolled, 51 in placebo, 52 in each of two tofacitinib groups. And there were modified New York criteria for eligibility and central radiographic reading was used. Patients had to have a BASDAI score of at least 4. That's the Barth Ankylosing Spondylitis Disease Activity Index. They had to have back pain of at least 4 on that scale and an inadequate response to prior non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Now, in fact, tofacitinib was tested at one of three doses, 2 milligrams, 5 milligrams, or 10 milligrams twice daily over 12 weeks with a 4-week washout period. And the primary endpoint was SAS20 response at week 12. This was what we call a Bayesian design study with a Bayesian Emax model for dose response characterization and a normal approximation for placebo comparison. This was also the first time that central reading had been used for definition of radiographic sacroiliitis in the context of an ankylosing spondylitis trial. Now, if we look at the patient characteristics, in fact, 196 patients completed the study of 208 who were randomized. It's of note that of the patients screened, a large proportion actually failed screening because they didn't meet radiological criteria in some cases. Now, the primary endpoint, the Emax model predicted rates were 40% for placebo, 67% for the 10 milligram dose twice daily, and 63% for the 5 milligram dose twice daily. And in fact, the response rates were significantly greater with tofacitinib at the 5 milligram twice daily dose versus placebo, but that was not the case with the higher dose of tofacitinib or the 2 milligram dose. If we look at the secondary and other efficacy endpoints, here's a table demonstrating some of these. So I'd like you to focus on the tofacitinib 5 milligram twice daily column. And of course, that's the approved dose for use of tofacitinib in this condition. But if you look, for example, on the top row at the ASAS 40 responses and the percentage of responders, just under 20% of placebo patients achieve that response, whereas over 46% of patients on the 5 milligram twice daily of tofacitinib achieve that response. And similarly, as you look down each row of this table, you can see that there are differentiations between the 5 milligram twice daily dose of tofacitinib and the placebo dose, which is on the left-hand side of the table. And if you want to study this in more detail, I'd refer you to this paper in the Annals of Rheumatic Diseases. So if we were to summarize some of the secondary and other key efficacy endpoints at 12 weeks of exposure, we've got ASAS 40 and the BASDAI 50. All tofacitinib groups had response rates of a similar magnitude and were significant versus placebo. In terms of the ASDAS, that's the ankylosing spondylitis disease activity score, all tofacitinib groups were statistically significantly improved from baseline as compared with placebo. And similarly, for the ASAS 5 out of 6 criteria, which approximates to close to remission, and again, the response rates were greater with tofacitinib versus placebo. Also, for clinically important improvements in ASDAS and low and moderate disease activity scores with ASDAS. So these were very encouraging results. In terms of safety, if we look at treatment emergent adverse events on the top row of this chart, in fact, the proportions are relatively low from what we see in some of the contemporary clinical trials. So around about half to fewer of the patients. But it is of note that for treatment emergent adverse events, which remember the majority are non-serious, and here numerically, there are more treatment emergent adverse events with the higher doses of tofacitinib than there were with placebo or lower dose tofacitinib. But when we look at serious adverse events, they're very few. One in the 5 milligram twice daily dose of tofacitinib, one in the upper 10 milligram twice daily dose, although neither of these were considered to be related to drug. We'll look at those a bit more closely in a minute, but before we do that, let's just look at the MRI outcomes. So this study was very nice because it also looked at this preliminary data for MRI change, and using the SPARC score for sacroiliac joints or the SPARC score for the spine, you can probably see from the line graphs on the left-hand side that there's a reduction with the tofacitinib doses. And if you look at another form of score in panel D and E, the Berlin score, you can also see a reduction with the tofacitinib doses as compared to placebo. And if we look at patient-reported outcomes, it was also clear that patients experience greater improvement subjectively with tofacitinib than they did with placebo. So these were exciting data. So looking at the sub-analyses that are available, the patients exhibiting the biggest clinical responses were those with high baseline acute phase response measured by CRP. Also, for those who had higher baseline MRI scores for the sacroiliac joints, the treatment effect that was demonstrable there was greater. And one of the things this points to, and we've seen this across the rheumatic disease, it's often easier to demonstrate change with therapeutic intervention in patients with more active disease. Looking at the safety, we've already talked about it in brief, but to now elaborate it on a little bit, the most frequently reported adverse events that were non-serious were nasopharyngitis and upper respiratory tract infections. I think as rheumatologists, we're very used to dealing with these with rheumatic disease. There was one cardiovascular event of hypertension with a higher dose of tofacitinib. There were two treatment-related cases of herpes zoster. Again, I think we're very familiar with that. And of course, we can now immunize against zoster to give protection. And there was one serious infectious event of irocyclitis with the 5 mg BD dose. But this was thought not to be related to study treatment because this patient had a prior history of such events. Of course, it's a comorbidity known to occur with ankylosing spondylitis. There were no serious infections, no tuberculosis, no GI perforation, and no deaths. So what can we conclude and what are the discussion points here? This was the first use of central reading to confirm the presence of radiographic sacroiliitis as an entry criteria, but it also highlighted how difficult it can be in routine clinical practice to be really sure that a patient has sacroiliitis in all cases. It's not always easy when there are more subtle changes present. The two higher doses of tofacitinib demonstrated clinical efficacy versus placebo for symptoms, signs, and spinal inflammation assessed on MRI. And the overall efficacy data suggested significant improvement with the two upper doses compared to placebo, but the difference between the two was relatively small. And of course, we use the 5 mg BD dose in clinical practice generally. Now, looking at the onset of action, it was remarkably fast. There was some separation in some endpoints as early as week 4, and certainly separation from placebo by week 8. So JAK inhibitors in general, and tofacitinib in particular, is a very rapidly acting drug. And this may be one of the considerations to think about when choosing an appropriate targeted therapy for our patients. In terms of safety, we've seen no new safety signals in this small preliminary trial, and the clinical results really suggested that JAK inhibition might be a new mode of action for managing ankylosing spondylitis. But in order to really assess that thoroughly, it merited a phase 3 study, and we're going to look at that phase 3 study now. So here's the phase 3 study, a very important one that was published recently. And this study really was to lead on from the phase 2 to confirm the efficacy of tofacitinib versus placebo. So it was a randomized double-blind placebo-controlled study enrolling 270 patients. The patients had to meet modified New York criteria for ankylosing spondylitis, and as in the phase 2 study, had to have a BASDAI score of at least 4, back pain of at least 4, and an inadequate response to at least 2 different non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Tofacitinib at 5 milligrams twice daily was compared to placebo over 16 weeks, and at that point, the placebo patients were crossed over to active drug. The primary endpoint was ASAS-20 at week 16, and a key secondary endpoint was the more stringent ASAS-40 at week 16. Analysis corrected for repeated measures using hierarchical testing with a step-down approach and a Cochrane-Mantel-Hansel for binary endpoints and a mixed model for the repeated measures. So let's look at the patient characteristics. There were 556 patients screened, of whom 270 went on to be randomized. It was a one-to-one randomization of tofacitinib to placebo, and the demographics were well matched across the baseline characteristics. Now, looking at the key primary and secondary endpoints, the ASAS-20 response rate at week 16 for tofacitinib was 56.4% as compared to 29.4% for placebo. The ASAS-40 response rate is effectively more discriminating. Here we saw over 40% of patients on tofacitinib responding, but only 12.5% of patients on placebo. The reason why the less discriminating responses are often chosen as a primary is in order to power to show a difference, you need to have a high proportion of patients achieving the particular endpoint. But in actual fact, the more stringent endpoint is more discriminating. And in this particular case, the study was sufficiently powered to convincingly show a statistically significant difference. And when the patients were stratified according to whether or not they'd had a prior biologic exposure, the response rates remain numerically greater with tofacitinib as compared to placebo. Now, if we look at some of the secondary endpoints here, they're depicted in the graph. Now, you might not be able to read the legends on the graph, so I've highlighted in blue text what they are. So the change in ASDAS, the ankylosing spondylitis disease activity score, in the top in panel A. In panel B, we're looking at change in high sensitivity CRP. And it's very obvious that the placebo-treated patients have very little change in ASDAS or in CRP, where there's a fairly precipitous improvement in CRP and in ASDAS for the tofacitinib-treated patients. We're then looking at the BASMI, the metric of movement in C, and down at the bottom, we're looking at function, and an increase there represents an improvement when you look at the FACIT score. And you can see, I think, very convincingly how nicely tofacitinib ameliorates these features as compared to the placebo. And when the placebo patients are crossed over to active drug, they catch up over time very nicely. In terms of safety, the adverse event rates were numerically higher with tofacitinib versus placebo, but up to week 48 of exposure, there were no deaths, no malignancies, no major adverse cardiovascular events, no thromboembolic events, no gastrointestinal perforations, opportunistic infections, or lung problems. So this is very important, bearing in mind that certainly MACE events and thromboembolic events have been highlighted as a potential issue in the oral surveillance study, which of course was in rheumatoid patients at prior risk of those events. Three patients had adjudicated hepatic events, three patients had non-serious herpes zoster, and one had a serious infection that was meningitis. Uveitis was reported in two patients, both of whom had a past history of uveitis. So, although adverse events were reported, it really wasn't unexpected for a population of this nature with highly active disease. So, what can we say in conclusion, and what are the key discussion points here? Well, the primary endpoint, the ASAS-20 response rate at week 16, was significantly greater with tofacitinib than placebo, so the primary endpoint was achieved. The secondary endpoints also demonstrated a range of significant improvements in both the objective and subjective measures, so patient-reported outcomes and the clinical measures. And there was a rapid onset of clinical response, amazingly, as early as week two in some cases, and sustained efficacy right through to week 48. So these efficacy findings were entirely consistent with the phase two study, and in fact, they're similar to those we've seen now with other JAK inhibitors, upadacitinib and filgotinib, in this disease indication, ankylosing spondylitis. And the safety profile is consistent with what we've seen in the established tofacitinib safety profile across the vast clinical trial program and indeed across a very large volume of real-world data. So we can conclude that patients with ankylosing spondylitis with a prior inadequate response to NSAIDs, and in some cases also inadequate response to biologics, had rapid, sustained, and clinically meaningful responses to tofacitinib with no new potential safety risks identified. And this suggests that overall the benefit-risk profile is favorable. And depending on any comorbidities that the patient may have and the patient personal preference for parenteral versus oral drug, it may well be that tofacitinib is actually a very good treatment choice for patients with ankylosing spondylitis. So thank you very much indeed for joining me, and I look forward to seeing you again on the next podcast. So my name's Peter Taylor, Emeritus Professor of Musculoskeletal Sciences at the University of Oxford in the UK.